This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Welcome to another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home, a week's end edition. On today's episode, with the bird flu affecting cattle, is it safe to drink milk and eat beef? We'll have the answer. The couple that accidentally returned their cat to Amazon, and a new plastic that could largely biodegrade in just 5 months. Plus, on This Week in History, Washington, D.C. is incorporated. That's all coming up on Cool Stuff.
Well, Marcus, I grabbed this story for you, as I know you are a big milk drinker and have asked about the bird flu that is affecting some of the livestock out there.
That is an accurate statement. I drink a lot of milk on the regular.
And just, I think it was a week ago you asked me about this. Well, the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. Department of Agriculture both announced in separate reports that their test of pasteurized milk and ground beef could not find any live H5N1 in the samples they tested. They said the findings seem, I know, good news, you can relax, you can drink your milk now. They said the findings seem to confirm that the pasteurization process can prevent the virus if it ends up in the milk. However, raw milk could still be dangerous to consume if it is tainted. So don't go drinking any raw milk, Marcus. Make sure you go to the store button or something.
Yeah, that's never been a thing for me. So always pasteurization.
All right. Well, throughout 9 states, if you didn't know, dozens of dairy farms have reported cases of H5N1 in their cattle, some dating back to late 2023. They say the strains are considered highly pathogenic due to the massive illness and deaths that have been caused by wild and domestic birds. However, to date, the infected cows have typically avoided serious illness, but they have shown symptoms such as reduced or discolored milk production and low appetite. Not all animals have been so lucky, though. Some cats, you know, that kind of roam around the farms, they have died from the outbreaks. And there was one case of a human being affected, but that one was non-fatal. In late April, the FDA said they detected genetic material from strains of H5N1 in some samples of store-bought pasteurized milk, and other researchers confirmed those findings. However, after what the FDA said was gold standard testing, the samples failed to produce any live samples of the virus. The agency tested 300 samples of dairy products that they collected from 38 states, which, by the way, those samples also included sour cream and cottage cheese. In their latest update, the FDA said, quote, "These results reaffirm our assessment that the commercial milk supply is safe," end quote. As for the meat supply, the USDA collected 30 samples of ground beef from stores in states where the outbreaks had occurred and had them tested. All of those tests came back negative as well. During that test, they also checked on powdered infant formula and powdered milk. Those came back negative too. Experts did expect that pasteurization process to render the virus inert, as it does for other infectious germs, so the findings really shouldn't come as a surprise. However, you want to make sure, so that's they did the testing. They did note that even finding the genetic evidence of the virus in the milk and the fact that there is now proof that the bird flu was infecting cows before anyone previously knew suggests that the outbreaks may actually be larger than current data shows, though.
Well, it's a pretty wild story, and I am pleased to hear that because I am a pretty large dairy consumer, that all seems to be well on that front. I not just milk, Reg, I am a big cottage cheese eater. I do eat a lot of burgers and steaks. I won't lie about that. I think that's the Midwest upbringing in me there with that type of consumption. I don't know about you. I mean, we're from the same state, but that was definitely big for me as a kid, and I haven't really kicked that habit as an adult.
I always found it odd that, we're from the cheese state, Wisconsin that when I was a kid, I could not eat cheese. I just couldn't do it. I think it all came down to I had the stomach flu twice within like months. Mm. And I kept seeing, you know, how Wisconsin is. You have all these commercials about cheese and you see the melty cheese and people pulling it apart and seeing that we don't feel good over and over and over made me not like cheese for the longest time. But now I love cheese. I eat a lot of dairy. I eat a lot of meat. I don't drink as much milk as you. I'm more of a water guy, but it is good to hear that this is all now should be safe. At least through all their tests that they've done, all of them came back as negative. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, positive news on that front. Of course, we hope for the animals' sake, too, that they get healthy and this thing is behind us sooner than later.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's pair.com.
Well, speaking of animals, animal lovers out there likely rejoice at this story. A house cat from Utah was recently reunited with its owners after inadvertently spending 6 days in an Amazon box shipped to California. Galena the Calico is known to nap or hide out in boxes from time to time, but in this instance, the box she'd cozied up inside was due to be taped up and shipped out. In addition to Galena, it contained a pair of shoes that Matt and Carrie Clark, the cat's owners, were set to return. Per GNN, the Clarks love their cat as much as she loves sitting in boxes, but her quiet demeanor got the best of her in this instance. They say cats have 9 lives, of course, and Galena likely needed a few of those to survive the 6 days without food or water. Thankfully, a series of fortunate events likely allowed her to pull through this undoubtedly stressful event. The first was that Matt did not seal the box perfectly, so Galena could breathe. The second, the weather wasn't all that hot at the time. And third, Galena was ultimately unboxed by the perfect person at the Yurupa Valley, California Fulfillment Center, the only one who really knew how to handle this kind of a situation. So Galena was discovered by an employee who in turn called their boss, Hunter Brandy, the returns manager who also happens to love cats and fosters them as a side gig. She showed up despite not being at work that day with a cat carrier and some food. Said Brandy, quote, "She eventually warmed up to me and let me pet her. I could tell she belonged to someone by the way she was behaving, so I took her home that night," end quote. Meanwhile, back in Utah, the Clarks were panicked, as you might expect, believing their cat to have vanished without a trace. They reportedly searched their home for hours, put up flyers around the neighborhood, and called friends and neighbors to alert them to the situation. But eventually, not a whole lot else you can do. Back in California, Hunter took Galena to a vet to be sure the cat was recovering from its ordeal and to check for a microchip. Galena was microchipped, leading to a phone call that Carrie told CNN she initially believed to be a joke. Quote, "Galena must have snuck into the box without him seeing and without us knowing, and then Matt came back and taped the box back up. She loves to hide in boxes, so she was pretty happy in there. She didn't make any noise. We literally had emotions of laughing hysterically to crying hysterically," in this case, referring to when they got her back. "They were so intense. It was just the strangest emotion, feeling both of those at the same time," end quote. Carrie and Matt then made the drive to California to pick up their beloved cat, and Brandy was able to record the moment they were reunited. I think the big lesson here, Reg, if you've got to mail something big, let me check that package once or twice again before sending it, at least if you have pets and maybe even small children in the home.
You know, that last paragraph answered my question. I was just going to ask you. Did they mail the cat back or did they go pick it up?
Nope, they made the drive. And I know that's not a short drive from Salt Lake City. It's drivable, but to get out to California to pick up their cat. I'm guessing there was a lot of joy on that trip out, just finally having a resolution.
Yeah. You're right. Check the box before you mail next time. I'm sure they're going to do that every time now, at least for a while, to make sure the cat's not in there.
Well, the cat has to be so insanely quiet. You would think most animals, the moment that thing was taped up, would at least maybe start pawing at it a little bit and, I don't know, give you some sort of inclination that, hey, is there something inside of this? The fact that the cat got in there, I guess went to sleep and then really never bothered to alert anyone to the fact that it was annoyed by a taped up box is pretty remarkable. Moving on to a story from the Good News Network, aka GNN, scientists believe they found a way to make plastics more durable and biodegradable. And they do so by adding bacterial spores to the product itself. This kind of quote-unquote living plastic can break down in about 5 months without the need for any other microbes. Wild. So led by scientists at the University of California, San Diego, researchers created this living plastic in the form of thermoplastic polyurethane, a soft but durable commercial plastic used in footwear, floor mats, cushions, and memory foam. The team explained the material is filled with bacterial spores that germinate when exposed to nutrients present in compost, which in turn leads to the material breaking down at the end of its life cycle. And because I'm guessing many of you are wondering, like I was, does this bacteria pose a health risk? Well, the type being used is Bacillus subtilis. That's a strain often used in probiotics and generally regarded as safe to humans and animals. It just has the added benefit of being able to break down plastic polymer materials. Per study co-senior author, Professor John Pokorsky, quote, "It's an inherent property of these bacteria. We took a few strains and evaluated their ability to use TPUs as a sole carbon source, then picked the one that grew the best," end quote. The research team opted for a dormant form of bacteria, bacterial spores, due to their resistance to harsh environmental conditions. Pokorsky explained that unlike fungal spores, which serve a reproductive role, bacterial spores have a protective protein shield that enables them to survive while in a vegetative state. And to make the biodegradable plastic, the researchers fed Bacillus subtilis spores and TPU pellets into a plastic extruder. The ingredients were mixed and melted at over 200 degrees Fahrenheit, then extruded as thin strips of plastic. To assess the material's biodegradability, the strips were placed in both microbially active and sterile compost environments. Professor Pokorsky said the compost setups were maintained at around 100 degrees Fahrenheit with a relative humidity ranging from 44 to 55%. Water and other nutrients in the compost triggered germination of the spores within the plastic strips, which reached 90% degradation within 5 months. And here's another key piece of information in all this. Per Pokorsky, quote, "What's remarkable is that our material breaks down even without the presence of additional microbes. Chances are most of these plastics will likely not end up in microbially rich composting facilities. So this ability to self-degrade in a microbe-free environment makes our technology more versatile," end quote. Equally fascinating, at least for me, for the study published in the journal Nature Communications, the bacterial spores were given an evolutionary nudge to adapt to the hot temperatures necessary for manufacturing the TPU. So they had some natural ability to withstand high heat, but the scientists also taking this a step further, the strains that survived the process that they put them through were then isolated, meaning the process of extreme heat. They were then isolated and put through the cycle again. Per study co-senior author Dr. Adam Feist, quote, "We continually evolved the cells over and over again until we arrived at a strain that is optimized to tolerate the heat. It's amazing how well this process of bacterial evolution and selection worked for this purpose," end quote. He said the spores also serve as a strengthening filler of the plastic, similar to how you might imagine rebar reinforces concrete. And while the researchers still need to study what's left behind after the material degrades, they believe that any lingering bacterial spores are likely harmless.
Okay, there are two things I don't like of the story. The rest of it sounds great. The only things that I hesitate on is when you say it's generally regarded as safe to humans and animals. I don't know how I feel about the word generally.
Fair enough. Like I kind of had the same thought when I did first read that. I would like to have a 100% guarantee that the plastic I'm consuming a beverage or food from is not going to make me sick.
And the last thing you said there, that lingering bacterial spores are likely harmless. And just hearing those two, everything else sounds great. Those two, if we could just shore up the not being harmful part, I would be on board 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. More research is going to be needed here to make sure that this technology is safe. And if it is, hey, game on, because I can tell you just walking around Las Vegas, you know, where I reside, there are some blocks where it's just disgusting. And you see a lot of plastic buildup, water bottles, other beverage bottles, different takeout boxes. And to have something that could degrade on its own within 5 months, I mean, what a leap forward that would be, as opposed to, what do they say, like hundreds of years for traditional plastic?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've heard other stories of trying to get the plastic to break down. So as long as we keep going with this advancement, as long as it's safe, that sounds great, because yeah, there's way too much plastic waste in the world right now.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards, that's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Taking a look at this day in history, on May 3rd, 1802, Washington, D.C. was officially incorporated by Congress. Now, there was some argument on what city was actually the first capital of the United States. Some consider Philadelphia the first because the Continental Congress met there for the first time in 1774 to sign the Declaration of Independence. However, in 1777, they fled Philadelphia to avoid British forces from attacking them, so they met in York, Pennsylvania, from 1777 to 1778, where they adopted the Articles of Confederation, the first constitution. Then they came back to Philly in 1778 when the British troops left the city. However, the capital moved four more times under the Articles of Confederation, to Princeton, New Jersey, Annapolis, Maryland, Trenton, New Jersey, and then to New York City. Then in 1787, they got rid of the Articles of Confederation and adopted the current Constitution, which listed New York as the permanent capital. In 1789, the first session of Congress was held in Federal Hall on Wall Street in New York, where they wrote the Bill of Rights and George Washington was inaugurated there. However, in 1790, Congress voted to move the capital back to Philadelphia until the new permanent capital could be established, which the location was chosen by President Washington. He appointed Pierre Charles L'Enfant to design the city, and then on November 17, 1800, they moved to their new home in Washington, D.C., which, of course, was named for the president and Christopher Columbus. Then, in May 3rd, 1802, that is when Congress officially incorporated the city. Of course, you know, there were some issues. In 1812, the U.S. declared war against Great Britain, which led to the invasion of the capital, and British set fire to the federal buildings. Damage was extensive. But by 1817, the White House was rebuilt and ready to welcome James Monroe, who served from 1817 to 1825 as president. Congress had spent 5 years in the temporary old brick Capitol building, which had been erected on the site of the present-day Supreme Court building. They reconvened in the newly Capitol in 1819. A little bit of history lesson there for you, I guess.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I had always heard, hey, like the first Capitol was Philadelphia, but I didn't know a whole lot about it. And so what you laid out there, the fact that it bounced around as much as it did in the early days of this country, even prior to it officially being a country, I think is pretty wild. So I guess it's good we ultimately landed on DC, but
yeah, I mean, Philadelphia seems like it should maybe be considered the first capital, seeing as how like 3-4 times, whatever it is, they went there for it to be the capital. But, you know, New York was listed as the capital in the Constitution originally. So I guess, and, you know, you had York is where they did the Articles of Confederation. I can see where people say we don't know what the first capital, what we want to label the first capital, I guess.
So you've got York and you've got New York on the list. Yeah, it's a little bit unclear, I guess, what should officially be declared the first. But I would side with, I think, a lot of people in saying Philadelphia was where it was at.
Well, there you have it. It must have been Philadelphia. Marcus said so.
Bang the gavel, says Marcus. Philadelphia.
Thanks for joining us on another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. I'm Reggie Rizzou. He's Marcus Path. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email us at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Also, like us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We'll be back with more cool stuff next week.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry, with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help. So you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.